It is time for the Warren County Radio Bible School, and today what we're going to have is a review lesson. We started this review lesson in our last class period, and I think we read the text. But since it ties so in with the Elam's notes on this text, I'm going to read the text again in just a moment. It is 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 12 through 19. Before I do, I'll say again, the Warren County Radio Bible School is brought to you by the Church of Christ at Rock Cliff. Our meeting house is located between McMinnville and Biola at the foot of Ben Lomond, just across from Mount Zion Road. We have Sunday Bible study at 9 a.m., followed by worship at 10 a.m., Sunday evening worship at 6 p.m., and Wednesday evening Bible study at 7 p.m., and all are welcome to all of our assemblies. I am Bill Boyd, the preacher at Rock Cliff, and the superintendent of this radio Bible school. Now this is the text for this review lesson. 1 Peter 4, verses 12 through 19. Beloved, think it not strange concerning the fiery trial among you, which cometh upon you to prove you, as though a strange thing happened to you. But inasmuch as ye are partakers of Christ's sufferings, rejoice, that at the revelation of his glory ye also may rejoice with exceeding joy. If you are reproached for the name of Christ, blessed are you, because the Spirit of glory and the Spirit of God resteth upon you. Let none of you suffer as a murderer, or as a thief, or as an evildoer, as a meddler in other men's matters. But if any man suffer as a Christian, let him not be ashamed, but let him glorify God in this name. For the time has come for judgment to begin at the house of God. And if it first begin at us, what shall be the end of them that obey not the gospel of God? And if the righteous is scarcely saved, what shall the ungodly and sinner appear? Wherefore, let them also that suffer according to the will of God commit their souls in well-doing unto a faithful Creator. The golden text is 1 Peter chapter 1 and verse 8. Whom, having not seen, ye love, on whom, though now you see him not, yet believing, ye rejoice greatly with joy unspeakable and full of glory. We have studied much of the persecutions of Paul and his fellow workers. Peter says, it is not strange that Christians then should have to endure fiery trials, but these serve to prove them. Since they were partakers of Christ's suffering, they would also rejoice with exceeding joy at his coming. If they were reproached for the name of Christ, they were blessed, because the Spirit of glory and the Spirit of God rested on them. But it would be a shame to have to suffer as murderers, or thieves, or evildoers, or meddlers in other men's matters. Meddlers in other men's matters are classed with murderers, thieves, and evildoers. Some otherwise good people seem to think it their business to meddle in the affairs of others. But if any man should suffer as a Christian, he should not be ashamed, but should glorify God in this name, that is, in the name Christian. Since Christians must thus be tried on earth and judged at the last day, what hope can there be for those who obey not the gospel of God? What will be their end? And if with difficulty, in self-denial, and by living soberly and righteously and godly here on earth, the righteous people are saved, what will become of the ungodly and sinners? Note the expression, the gospel of God. It is God's gospel. This gospel must be obeyed. That is, in obedience to it, people must live the Christian life. 2 Thessalonians chapter 1, 7 through 10 tells the end of all who know not God and obey not the gospel. Therefore, all who suffer persecution should by well-doing commit their souls to a faithful Creator. The only way one can commit oneself to God is by doing His will. It is a shame that some professed Christians do not sufficiently serve Christ as to incur Satan's displeasure and bring persecutions on themselves. But all that would live godly in Christ Jesus shall suffer persecution. 2 Timothy 3:12. No persecution, perhaps, may be evidence of not living godly. And thus that review lesson comes to a close. On the following page, we have the first Sunday school lesson for the fourth quarter of 1925. This is the Sunday school's Sunday school lesson written for the Sunday schools of October the 4th, 1925. It's the third quarter of a 9-month course on the spread of Christianity with studies in Acts and the Epistles. And this one is about Paul in Athens. We're going to read about that in Acts chapter 17, verses 16 through 34. Acts 17, 16. Now while Paul waited for them at Athens, his spirit was provoked within him as he beheld the city full of idols. So he reasoned in the synagogue with the Jews and the devout persons, and in the marketplace every day with them that met him. And certain also of the Epicureans and Stoic philosophers encountered him. And some said, "What would this babbler say?" Others, "He seemed to be a setter forth of strange gods, because he preached Jesus and the resurrection." And they took hold of him and brought him into the Areopagus, saying, "May we know what this new teaching is which is spoken by thee? For thou bringest certain strange things to our ears. We would know therefore what these things mean." Now all the Athenians and the strangers sojourning there spent their time in nothing else but either to tell or to hear some new thing. And Paul stood in the midst of the Areopagus and said, "Ye men of Athens, in all things I perceive that ye are very religious. For as I passed along, I observed the objects of your worship. I found also an altar with this inscription, 'To an unknown God.' What ye therefore worship in ignorance, this I set forth unto you. The God that made the world and all things therein, he being Lord of heaven and earth, dwelleth not in temples made with hands. Neither is he served by men's hands as though he needed anything, seeing he himself giveth to all life and breath and all things. And he made of one every nation of man to dwell all the face of the earth, having determined their appointed seasons and the bounds of their habitation, that they should seek God, if haply they might feel after him and find him, though he is not far from each one of us. For in him we live and move and have our being, as certain even of your own poets have said, 'For we are also his offspring.' Being then the offspring of God, we ought not to think that the Godhead is likened to gold or silver or stone graven by art and device of man. The times of this ignorance therefore God overlooked, but now he commandeth all men that they should all everywhere repent, inasmuch as he has appointed a day in which he will judge the world in righteousness by the man whom he hath ordained, whereof he hath given assurance unto all men, in that he hath raised him from the dead. Now when they heard of the resurrection of the dead, some mocked, but others said, 'We will hear thee again concerning this.' Thus Paul went out from among them. But certain men clave unto him and believed, also among whom was Dionysius the Areopagite, and a woman named Damaris, and others with them." The golden text for this lesson is Acts 17 in verse 28. In him we live and move and have our being. The devotional text is Psalm 139. I am turning there at this time. Psalm 139. This psalm has an inscription. It is for the chief musician, a psalm of David. O Jehovah, thou hast searched me and know me. Thou knowest my down sitting and my uprising. Thou understandest my thought afar off. Thou searchest out my path and my lying down. Thou art acquainted with all my ways. For there is not a word in my tongue, but lo, O Jehovah, thou knowest it altogether. Thou hast beset me behind and before, and laid thine hand upon me. Such knowledge is too wonderful for me. It is high, I cannot attain unto it. Whither shall I go from thy spirit? Or whither shall I flee from thy presence? If I ascend into heaven, thou art there. If I make my bed in Sheol, behold, thou art there. If I take the wings of the morning, and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, even there shall thy hand lead me, and thy right hand shall lay hold on me. If I say, surely the darkness shall overwhelm me, and the light about me shall be night, even the darkness hideth not from thee, but the night shineth as the day. The darkness and the light are both alike unto thee. For thou didst form my inward parts, thou didst cover me in my mother's womb. I will give thanks unto thee, for I am fearfully and wonderfully made. Wonderful are thy works, and that my soul knoweth right well. My frame was not hidden from thee when I was made in secret, and curiously wrought in the lowest parts of the earth. Thine eyes did see my unformed substance, and in thy book they were all written, even the days that were ordained for me, when as yet there was none of them. How precious also are thy thoughts unto me, O God! How great is the sum of them! If I should count them, they're more in number than the sand. When I awake, I'm still with thee. Surely thou wilt slay the wicked, O God. Depart from me, therefore, ye bloodthirsty men, for they speak against thee wickedly, and thine enemies take thy name in vain. Do not I hate them, O Jehovah, that hate thee? And am not I grieved with those that rise up against thee? I hate them with perfect hatred, and they are become mine enemies. Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me, and know my thoughts, and see if there be any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way of everlasting. Now, in looking at this Sunday school lesson, we have a geographical note about Athens. It was the literary capital of Greece and of the world, the city to which every Roman who sought a finished education resorted to complete his studies, the home of philosophers, orators, sculptors, painters, and poets, and the great university where many thousand strangers were gathered to study. It now has about 100,000 inhabitants, notwithstanding its renowned learning. It was full of idols. It was said it was easier to find a god than a man in Athens. There was a synagogue of the Jews in Athens. And here are some helps and hints for the teachers about the three churches of Macedonia. In leaving Macedonia, Paul left behind him three churches planted at radiant points from which the gospel could be successfully spread throughout the province if the disciples proved faithful and zealous. Thessalonica occupied the central portion, with Philippi 100 miles to the northeast and Berea 60 miles to the southwest. The Philippians had with Paul fellowship in furtherance of the gospel, Philippians 1:5, and they assisted him in different places, Philippians 4:10-20. He said that in the midst of a crooked and perverse generation, They were seen as lights in the world holding forth the word of life.